The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTakes.com studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us, Brad Sesmatt, Sports360AZ.com, on AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter, at Brad Sesmatt, C-E-S-M-A-T. A lot going on in the world of sports. It's a great day because there's not one overriding topic. I can go a whole bunch of different directions, which makes for a fun show. Chris Sheridan, NBA insider, the publisher and editor at Sheridan Hoops, is going to be with us. One of his contributors ripped on the Suns for making the least amount of moves with players and picks at the trade deadline and where the Suns are. Also, if LeBron James should go back to Cleveland this weekend, if you haven't heard the news on LeBron James looking at going to Cleveland, why he's looking at going. A lot to get to with Chris Sheridan. The Clippers are in town tonight to take on the Suns. I think this could be a first-round playoff matchup potentially for the Suns if they make it. Chris Sheridan coming up in about 15 minutes. Tom Candiotti, always good to talk Diamondbacks baseball. Last night he saw Archie Bradley's debut. That is what the Valley and the state's buzzing about today. Archie Bradley on the mound, just killing it last night. We'll talk to the Diamondbacks color analyst and, of course, the great knuckleballer Tom Candiotti will join us. I want to know from Tom, not just on Archie Bradley, but when you're out at spring training and you're watching these games, how much stock does he put into what he's seeing here in spring? There are some fans that'll say, man, this guy was horrible. Well, that's because they're working on pitches. What about the whole dead arm period of time? We used to hear about that in spring training. Well, they're hitting the dog days and you can't have that anymore. In this day and age of specialization, guys being worked with year-round, and the Diamondbacks going to Australia in 17 days to open the regular season, you can't have that. So I want to talk to Candy about that. Talk to the Lopes. Looking forward to this today. GCU, a big part of what we do. Grand Canyon University every Tuesday. Today, talk to the Lopes. They have a sand volleyball program. I was actually out at GCU a couple weeks ago, and I saw the women's sand volleyball team playing. They open with the U of A. It's not like they're just sitting over there on the sideline saying, let's just walk before we run. No, they're jumping right into it. So this week, Chris Neighbor will be with us. Their dual meet against U of A and also Arizona Christian that's this weekend. So a lot to get to on the show, a lot of good topics, things on my mind in the world of sports on a busy, busy Tuesday. Let's get off and running. Eric Sorensen has our Facebook question of the day. E.
Well, Brad, as you mentioned, the Valley is abuzz over Archie Bradley. Diamondbacks phenom made his debut last night against the Rockies' A lineup. It was a split squad game for the Rocks, but they even, you know, kept some of their good players like Gonzalez and some of the other guys. So today, it appears unlikely that Bradley will crack the opening day roster after the signing of Bronson Arroyo. But given the club's injury history and Bradley's success in the minors, he's been absolutely lights out. Today we go over under. We ask you, Bradley makes his major league debut with the Diamondbacks by Cinco de Mayo.
Whew, by May 5th.
By May 5th. And keep it, just remember, Brad, the Diamondbacks front office, Kevin Towers, Kirk Gibson, although they got the finger quote extensions.
Yeah.
You know, come along now.
I'm going under. I'm going under on May 5th. He's going to be here before then. And if he pitches like he did last night, and it was against the Rockies A lineup. Why was it against the Rockies A lineup? Because they're going to face Archie Bradley, too.
Sure.
There's certain teams, there's certain organizations you'll see in spring training.
In the division.
Within the division, mm-hmm. You're not going to throw Wade Miley out against the Rockies or the Giants ordinarily. I mean, you've got spring training games, but you're not going to throw the Corbins and those because you don't want that A lineup to see. For Archie Bradley, okay. Let's see what you got here, dude.
The back half of the rotation is a mixed bag with the Diamondbacks anyway. Trevor Cahill, Brandon McCarthy, they've been up, they've been down.
They're starting Cahill the second game of the season.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, I know.
But maybe it's to get an answer.
Maybe.
Maybe it's to get an answer. Head over to Facebook.com/Sports360AZ.
Wow, we actually agree on that.
No, I like
it. I thought you'd blow that right out of the water and say, oh, no, he won't be here till June.
No, come on. Look.
The future is now, right?
You also have to understand that the Diamondbacks are a very savvy PR organization. Very, 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 very savvy. They have people that go on Twitter that write about, can't wait, I'm so excited for today's game. It's like the Suns. They have all these people that go on social media to try to create buzz. And that's part of the deal in this day and age. They're not fans, they're employees. And Archie Bradley is one of these people that will generate buzz and interest and sell jerseys and bring television ratings. There's a whole business side to having him come up. And if he's ready, then bring him on. Let's get you caught up some things on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino, just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. When was the last time you pulled out on the slot and you heard the winning and the coins falling? You know, it's a lot of fun to do that. There's fresh snow that's fallen up at the Sunrise Ski Resort. There's great food. There's rooms to be had. Why not take this weekend, plan ahead, make it a long weekend, a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Spring break for the kids is coming up. Why not head on up and do some skiing at Sunrise, some snowboarding, some sledding, and stay at the Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. That is the Honda Resort and Casino. So Archie Bradley, yeah, last night, 3 innings, a hit, 6 strikeouts, 1 outing. That's all it was. It was 1 outing, but it was an awful big step forward for him. We'll talk to Tom Candiotti in about 25 minutes about it. Here is Archie Bradley. How did you think you threw?
I think very well. You know, like you said, it's nice to get out there and face someone with a different jersey. Got myself into some trouble in the second inning, but I think the positive thing is I was able to work out of it. You know, me and Blanco worked very well together that inning and made some good pitches, and it's good to you know, get through that and pitch through it my first outing.
It's interesting. Henry Blanco caught last night. Henry Blanco's everybody's going to talk about Miguel Montero, and this isn't anything I'm starting here. It's just Henry Blanco's this quiet guy behind the scenes outwardly, but inwardly is a very valuable part to, I think, any organization. When he's done playing, he will be a guy that moves on within the organization with the Diamondbacks. But they had Henry Blanco catch him last night. I don't think that's by any coincidence. Hey, kid, you know, let's show a different look out here. We're on facing Colorado's A lineup last night. How did Archie Bradley feel?
I think it was very challenging and very fun. You know, it's exciting too. You know, I've watched those guys for a couple of years now, and to finally, you know, be on the mound looking at them in a game and to compete against them and to get them out, you know, it was very exciting and fun, and it was good, and I liked it.
Was Archie Bradley nervous out there?
Oh, definitely. You know, I get nervous every game. I think you're not human if you don't. And until I get that first pitch over is not really until I settle down and get into it.
So let's say Bradley has a couple of more strong outings like the one that we saw last night. If you're the Diamondbacks, you've already said, hey, Trevor Cahill is going to be our number two starter, at least on the trip to Australia. Are the Diamondbacks, and I've maintained this, like, for example, the Dodgers have probably 10 arms that they could throw in their starting rotation. Probably about 10. If you think of Herron and Loasco and Paul Mahomes and Josh Beckett's had a good spring, and on top of having Kershaw and Greinke and Ryu, and all, I mean, that's a lot of arms. The Diamondbacks, on the other hand, if you look at the number of arms that they have that you feel confident in, Miley, Corbin, do you feel comfortable and confident in McCarthy? Yeah, and spring, he's looked fine. It's spring. Last year, he didn't do much. Trevor Cahill, last year, he didn't do much. Bronson Arroyo, good veteran arm to bring in. And you feel like you're going to get 200 innings out of him. My point is there's probably about 3 arms that I can sit here and say, yeah, this looks really good. I'm still in the jury is out mode on Cahill and on McCarthy. If, in fact, Bradley blows through the spring, you can always trade away an arm. That's just the way it is. Yeah, the easy move is, well, he's going to go to Reno. Why would you do that? Any reason to do that? I think the Diamondbacks have to be open to the, he's going to begin the big club season with us. I mean, you have a guy like Randall Delgado, that's probably a 6th or 7th guy. Cole Mentor could be a 7 or 8 guy. There's probably about 6 to 8 arms that I can roll off for the Diamondbacks. Dodgers have 10. That's why the Dodgers are favored to win and win with ease in the National League West this year. So it's very cool that Bradley would go out and pitch as well as he did last night. I like that. We have a Scottsdale game tonight. That's right. The Clippers are in town and they were off last night. I saw where Jared Dudley about 5 o'clock tweeted, we've arrived in Phoenix. That's plenty of time to roll into Scottsdale. Problem is, we're now sitting here at March 4th, and teams like the Clippers now are probably not doing the Scottsdale nights as much as they used to. So you have players on that team up and down that roster that make me look at it and say, that's a team that's probably going to be in the Western Conference semis or the Western Conference finals. I don't think DeAndre Jordan gets enough credit for being one of the top players in the league. I think Doc Rivers has done a terrific job with him on the defensive end of the floor. Tonight is, without question, a huge game for the Suns. Here's Goran Dragic.
No, it's fun. I mean, you always want to play against the best players in the league, and that's just
you know, big motivation for me. I know it's going to be tough, but at the same time, it's not going to be easy for them too. So, you know, we have to play hard. And, you know, if we want to be good teams, we have to demonstrate we can beat those teams.
Okay, and so for the Suns, this could be a potential first-round playoff matchup. The Suns are right on the cusp, as excited as everybody in the Valley and in the state has been about the Suns that follows the basketball team. They're still barely hanging in on the playoff picture in the Western Conference. Tonight, it's the Clippers. Thursday night, it's Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City against the Suns. Huge couple of days to gauge where they are. Last week, they dropped three in a row, had a bit of a meltdown, had an injury to Dragic. They don't have Bledsoe back as of yet. So while there's been a lot of anticipation and excitement, I'm still of the camp of been a nice season, not throwing water on it, but you got to show me something down the stretch when teams care. I don't put any stock into what games you won back in December and January. If the Suns were to play the Indiana Pacers today, who they swept, the Suns beat them twice, I think the Pacers would pound on them. They didn't care. They don't care certain times of the year. LeBron had 61 last night, his new career high. Wilt Chamberlain dropped 60 32 times in his run. And last night, it was just the LeBron show, one after another after another.
In the lane, LeBron, pull up, jump shot. Got it. 59 now for James.
Ho-ho!
Oh, he's close!
Woo!
Yeah, it's a lot of fun doing games when you have a really good team. Here's LeBron afterwards.
I felt like I had a golf ball thrown into the ocean, you know, so especially in that third quarter, you know, at one point I pulled up behind the three-point line, probably like 30 feet. And, you know, when that one went in, I knew I was in a really, really good groove.
So here's the thing on LeBron. Can he score 100 in a game? Could he lead the league in scoring? On the other side, we'll talk to Chris Sheridan from SheridanHoops.com. We'll talk to Chris Sheridan about that. Also, the story that has come out today or last night that LeBron wants to return to Cleveland this weekend. The Cavaliers are going to honor his teammate Zydrunas Ilgauskas, Big Z. Big Z was one of the first mentors for LeBron when he came into the league. The Heat have the night off. LeBron says he wants to go attend the game. I can see LeBron flying on in on a commercial jet on seat C23 on Southwest, getting off, trying to hail a cab, going to the game, trying to bump into a scalper, say, hey, can you get me a seat? Or I can see him flying private, being picked up in a limo, being taken down below. And will the Cavaliers welcome him with open arms? And is this the front end of LeBron's return to Cleveland? Really interesting story there with LeBron James. We'll talk Suns next with Chris Sheridan, their season, LeBron, and much more. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/Sports360AZ.
Sports360AZ on AZ Central Sports as well. White Mountain Radio and on Twitter. Lots of ways to take in the show. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. As we continue on tonight, the Suns have the Clippers, a Scottsdale game, as I like to call them, where the Clippers were in town last night. Maybe they hit the bars in Scottsdale. I don't know. The Suns are sitting there. The final playoff spot, they're tied with Dallas today. If the playoffs were to start today, it could be the Suns against San Antonio, the Suns against Oklahoma City. I don't think it's going to be Suns against Clippers, but there's a lot to get to with the Suns. Also, LeBron James here is Chris Sheridan. Always good to have Chris on board, NBA insider, publisher, editor-in-chief, SheridanHoops.com. SheridanHoops.com, great site to check out for lots of content around the NBA. Chris, I appreciate you coming on board with us. As you sit here today and look at the Suns, big picture, what do you like, what don't you like about what's gone on out here this year in Phoenix?
Well, number one, Brad, if I'm a Suns fan, I want to see them make the playoffs because Memphis is hard charging right now, and somebody's going to slip, whether it's Phoenix, whether it's Golden State or Dallas. I think it's imperative right now that you make the playoffs. It's nice to be everybody's darling through the year, but if you finish ninth in that conference, that this is no good, you know. So right now, I think the Suns got to concentrate on, you know, all these Eastern Conference opponents they're going to face in the month of March. They got 10 games against the East. They should probably set their sights on going like 9-1 against the East, and then you see how things shake out. You know, they play the Grizzlies three games before the end of the season, game number 79. I think that's going to be a huge game. Mm. And you know, in the short term, I think you use these two games against the Clippers to measure yourself. and you also wait and see that, if Eric Bledsoe is ready to come back. You know, if he's scrimmaging 5-on-5 for the last few days, Brad, he's got to be close. And you know he wants to come back against the Clippers, against his old team. It doesn't have to be in tonight's game because they play each other two out of the next three games. But, you know, those are all the big picture things. You make the playoffs, you know, you get fat against the East and you hold off whoever it is who's going to slip. But if Memphis comes in, you know, maybe Golden State, maybe Dallas is the team that slips.
Chris Sheridan, SheridanHoops.com, with us for a couple of minutes. Are you convinced that the worst is over here in Phoenix, meaning the garbage that we saw on the floor last year, where you have to get really bad to get really good? Have they proven to you, Chris, that this season shows that they're heading in the right direction, or are we still in a prove-it mode here for a period of time?
You know, that's a really good question, Brad. And, you know, they're the team that's going to earn Jeff Hornacek the Coach of the Year honors, as long as they make the playoffs. If they miss the playoffs, I think Terry Stotts will be in the mix there as well for what he's done with Portland. Certainly, yeah, the worst is over. They brought in Bledsoe, who was playing great before he went down, and what Dragic is doing, you know, the fans are chanting MVP out there for him, and they got a good argument. I mean, the guy's shooting 55% in his last 10 games. It's very rare for an NBA guard to shoot over 50%. John Stockton used to do it. Tony Parker does it year after year. Dwayne Wade does it year after year, but that's about where the list ends. And for Goran to really come on like this, look, I think he's got the most improved player award wrapped up, and he's going to get some MVP votes. That's how phenomenal this guy has been playing, being able to lead the team and keep them well, you know, with their heads above water during the Bledsoe injury. It's just phenomenal. So, you know, that's... Yeah, I think the worst is over, but I also say, what are you going to do now?
Right.
Is it just good enough? Are you just going to be happy to make the playoffs, or you want to, you know, let me ask you this, Brad. What's the goal?
No, that's my point, Chris. It's great for fans to be excited about where they are now versus a year ago when we went through the absolute disaster in the front office, the absolute joke on the bench and coaching. And to see Jeff come here and do what needs to be done, to see Ryan McDonough come here and do what needs to be done, and actually not see or hear from Lon Babbie or Robert Sarver. And just let these guys in. If Lon's doing things behind the scenes, which I know he is, that's fine. I've been here 20 years, Chris, and when I see how this organization completely fell from grace, I would like to see them get back there and not just be happy to have a little group. One of your contributors mentioned that the Suns didn't do anything at the deadline, which is fine. I'd wanted them to go chase Kevin Love. Everybody would want Kevin Love on their team. They have four first round picks. Were you surprised they didn't do anything out here at the deadline?
Yeah, I really was. You know, Kevin Love, everybody would like to have him, but he's not available. But the guy that was available to him was Pau Gasol. And if what I'm reading is true and they could have had him for one draft pick, that's a no-brainer to me, because like I asked you before, what's the goal?
Yeah.
Is the goal to make the playoffs? No. The goal is to win a championship.
Yep.
And if you're going into the playoffs, guess what? You got a chance to win the championship, because you don't know what's going to happen during the playoffs. Nobody knew last year going in that Russell Westbrook was going to go down and out for the series in game one against the Rockets. But that's what happened. And things happen in the playoffs, be it suspensions, injuries. That if you got a good team with veteran players who've been there before, you can advance when you're not supposed to. You know, eight seeds have beaten one seed before. Seven seeds have beaten two seeds before. So, you know, if I'm a Suns fan, I'm a little bit disappointed that you wouldn't sacrifice one of your four first round draft picks to put a guy like Pau Gasol on your team. And you know, even if you're not going to keep him past this year, you can still sign and trade that guy and get something back. You could get back the first rounder that you gave up. So. You know, I think with Ryan McDonough and some of the younger GMs in the league, Sam Hinkie in Philadelphia, certainly, you know, Daryl Morey in Phoenix, these guys put an enormous amount of value on stockpiling draft picks. And the reason is because you get a guy in the draft and he's on the rookie scale for 4 years.
Right.
So you can control his, you know, his money. He's going to be underpaid for 4 years. And then you decide what to do with him, whether to keep him or let him go and move on. Yeah, that's nice to have, and it keeps you out of the luxury tax and all, but... At the end of the day, the bottom line is, how far are you going to go in the playoffs if you're a playoff team? You can't just be happy with getting there. Look, the Milwaukee Bucks were a playoff team last year, okay? And now the Milwaukee Bucks are the worst team in the NBA. So, you know, fortunes change from year to year, and sometimes they take really, really big swings. And if you had a chance to get a guy like Pau Gasol and all you had to give up was Okafor's contract and a number one pick, to me, that's a no-brainer. You just you do that, and then you go into the playoffs this year, and you say, you know what? We're not trying to. We're not happy just to be here. We're trying to win a championship, and we'll roll the dice with what we got. We got a high-scoring, fast team, third highest scoring team in the NBA, and we'll put you know what we do well against what you do well, and see where it goes. And if you win game one or game two on the road, guess what? The momentum has swung your way, and you got a good team on their heels.
Well, and also you can stockpile all the draft picks you want, but Alex Len and Archie Goodwin haven't done anything this year, so. It's been done by the group that was assembled this year. And that's why I have this. This is nice and this is fun, but I don't think that the worst could be behind them. I could see them regressing. As you pointed out, Milwaukee is a perfect example. A year ago, they're a playoff team. A year later, they're brutal. Out here, it's a Goran Dragic rolled ankle away right now with the Bledsoe injury of them being a train wreck. But we'll see what happens. The Clippers are here tonight. I want to shift gears in our remaining moments. What do you make out of LeBron and the Zilgauskas story today? Everybody's talking about it. Is it calculated? Is it just LeBron being LeBron? Is it the Durant thing? Where do you make out of the Zilgauskas story today, Chris?
Well, what do you make out of it, Brad? You give me your opinion first.
I look at it as if LeBron wants to go see Zydrunas Elgauskas on a day off, I don't think he's flying Southwest and C23 being taking a cab and finding somebody to get him a pair of tickets, right? He's going to go,
exactly.
And he's going to roll in there in all of his grandeur. If Z really made that much of an impact on LeBron James, great. That's great. If you want to go on your day off, who am I to say you shouldn't go? But to think that it's not somewhat calculated, are you kidding me?
Well, I disagree.
Do we disagree?
I think LeBron and Zydrunas are great friends. Great friends. You know, Z was LeBron's guy when he came into the league. And, you know, LeBron deals in a currency called jet time. Most of us just deal with money or credit cards. But,
yeah.
If you're really, really rich, you deal in a currency called jet time, and he can rent himself a jet, fly up to Cleveland, go to the retirement, the jersey retirement ceremony, get back on his jet, and be home in his own bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. So, I think he's doing it because he wants to show respect for his friend and a guy who showed him the ropes when he came into the league. And I don't make anything more of it than that. You know, I know in Cleveland, everybody wants to overemphasize anything LeBron does. And you know, they still have hopes there that he's going to opt out of his contract this year and come back to the Cavs. And, you know, I think that's probably going to happen, but it's about 6-7 years down the road.
Mm.
I can see LeBron finishing his career, though. But for the short term, or for the next few years, that guy's got no reason to leave Miami whatsoever. So I think everybody's making a big deal of it, and LeBron is certainly a lightning rod, but I see no ill will in him or no hidden agenda in him going up to Cleveland to see his buddy's number retired. I think it's a nice move.
Well, I bring that up because, yes, it's a nice move, but I do think that, hey, I'm willing to come back here. If anybody thinks that Dan Gilbert and I are at complete odds with one another, they're sadly mistaken. I still see Cleveland as value. That's my point on it. That anybody thinks that the bridge was burned.
It's still his hometown, you know, yeah. Akron and Cleveland. But you know, you talk to anybody from Ohio, and they're two different places. But for the for the rest of us, it's about the same thing. And LeBron does have a vested image and a vested interest in keeping his image positive and good. And you know, certainly scoring 61 points last night, 25 in the third quarter, was nuts. That's the kind of thing that that makes fans pay attention. But in this day and age, with social media and with so much attention to what goes on off the court, I think we spend more time talking about what goes on off the court and what's going to happen in the future
mm-hmm.
than we do talking about what went on the court. And, you know, this is a perfect example in this interview. You know, we're talking about what's he going to Cleveland for? What's it really mean? I don't think it really means anything, to be honest with you, Brad.
Kevin Love, you're convinced that, well, first of all, he wasn't available, but that he's going to stay in Minnesota or go to the Lakers.
I think it's one or the other. I don't think anybody else is in the mix. And certainly, you know, the Lakers are going to have the cap room to go after him.
Right.
And that's a marquee franchise that everybody wants to play for.
I'll let you go off that, Chris. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
All right, Brad.
Chris Sheridan, publisher, editor-in-chief, SheridanHoops.com. Always good to have him on the program. We switch gears on the other side. So the buzz in Arizona about Archie Bradley making his debut for the Diamondbacks last night. He was terrific. He was outstanding. Tom Candiotti joins us on the other side, Diamondbacks analyst. Always good to talk pitching. Tom Candiotti, one of the best in the business, can get around to that knuckle curve of Archie Bradley's. And where are the Diamondbacks at from a pitching standpoint as they get ready for the opening of the season? That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat, Sports 360 AZ, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio. Stay with us.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports 360 AZ.
So a lot of you today have been sending notes about Archie Bradley last night and Archie Bradley's performance, and very excited, pump site geeked, as I like to say. Tom Candiotti joins us now, Diamondbacks analyst, of course, great major leaguer. I'm curious from Tom's end of things on a number of fronts, but let's just start with what in your mind, Tom, is worth paying attention to in pitching lines like last night? I know fans get excited, but for you yourself in spring training, what do you pay attention to?
Well, one of the things I'm looking at when I watch Archie Bradley throw is I know he's got a great arm. You know, the kid's a great athlete, obviously. You know, but, you know, you have to learn how to pitch a little bit. So I'm looking to see how he works his changeup, how he works his breaking ball. Is he able to throw those pitches when he's behind in the count? Is he able to constantly pitch ahead, or is he falling behind and guys are just, you know, they just can't catch up with his stuff? I want to see, you know, the pitchability a little bit. But having said that, he has got some kind of tremendous live arm, and the ball is explosive. His changeup last night was excellent. His curveball was really impressive. And so, you know, he didn't, you know, it's always one thing to pitch, you know, 3-4 innings or something like that. But, you know, you also want to see him go through the lineup a couple different times, so hitters get a gauge on it and see what he does to him the next time around and even the third time through.
What was the most impressive part of his performance last night to you, Tom?
I think it was his poise for me. You know, it's his first outing. You know, everyone's, you know, eyes are on Archie. But, you know, I liked the way he was throwing strikes. You know, he got into some trouble. You know, he worked his way out of it. The one thing that he has that a lot of guys don't have and a lot of the great pitchers have is the ability to be able to bear down. And he got some big strikeouts when he needed to. He's got, you know, he's got two good out pitches, and I think his changeup is a work in progress. But like I said, he's got that explosive fastball that, you know, even some of the good hitters just can't catch up with right now. It's pretty impressive.
Tom Candiotti, Diamondbacks analyst with Brad Sussmat for a couple of minutes. Last night, Archie Bradley making his debut. Fans really buzzing about it today. What do you want to see from him that you didn't see last night moving forward in his next outing?
Well, I think the next level, too, is you want to see how he works with guys on base. Everybody can go out. Every pitcher can go out, and you can have a great outing. You know, pitcher from the windup. Obviously, that's what you want to do. But that's not going to happen all the time. So you have to make your critical pitches, pitching from the stretch with guys on base. I had a long talk with Greg Maddux once. We pitched against each other, and we're friends on the golf course and off. And one of the things that he always told me was, when I work on my bullpens, I need to learn how to make the best pitches of the game out of the stretch. And so in spring training, it's actually good to get work out of the stretch with guys on base, to be able to make those critical pitches, to get a ground ball if you need it, to get a strikeout if you need it. That's the one thing I really want to see from Archie. You know, the results are great. They're impressive when you strike out, you know, six guys in three innings or whatever it is.
Right.
But you also want to see, you know, every game's not going to go like that. So you have to see how he holds runners on, your slide step, you know, being able to pitch from the stretch. And so that's what I'm the next step that I see from Archie. That's what I want to see.
You know, it's interesting because the questions I'm getting are, who does he remind you of? I was never on the mound, and that's a very basic question. I'll throw it by you. It can be unfair to ask it, but fans are asking, who does Archie Bradley remind you of, Tom?
Well, there could be a number of pitchers right now. You know, I've only seen him really in spring training, you know, a little bit last year. And then, of course, you know, just his one start so far this year. So I haven't really been able to see him pitch in a game situation, you know, over, you know, where he's going 8 or 9 innings like that. So having said that, I would, you know, when you look at some of the pitchers with some of his kind of stuff, you know, the first guy that comes to mind for me in my era was a guy like Roger Clemens. Very explosive fastball, who can beat you with a high fastball if need be.
Wow.
But he pitches down, and he's got good command. I think Archie can be, you know, a similar type. Now, is he going to have those kind of numbers that Roger had? Yeah, that's tough when you're talking about a guy winning 300 games.
Sure.
And multiple Cy Youngs. But, you know, he's got that kind of explosive stuff.
Yeah, but coming from you, that's a big name to throw right out there, that you see that type of potential. Not that he's there yet.
I didn't want to compare him to Tom Candiotti.
Yeah.
He hasn't got that knuckleball yet. So,
well, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. Every time I hear a Tom Candiotti interview, it usually goes right into the knuckleball part of it. And that's fine. But I tend to think that there's a lot more that you would like to talk about and can talk about in great lengths, along with what people know you to have done. The knuckle curve of Archie Bradley. Where do you see it right now?
Well, I think it's good. You know, the guys that have had the best knuckle curves that I've played with or against or seen as a coach, one of them was Bert Hooten, who had mm-hmm. the knuckle curve that would throw it. And, you know, Happy had a good one. He showed us one day. He was a coach for the Dodgers that would come into spring training and show us. And the other guy that I pitched against was Mike Messina. And Mike had a good knuckle curve that he was able to command a lot. Hooten told me that when he threw his knuckle curve, you know, it wasn't a pitch that he could throw with a lot of confidence when he was 2-0, 3-1. You know, he didn't like throwing it then. Messina could. He didn't mind throwing it at that point. So I think with any successful major league pitcher, you have to be able to throw some kind of breaking ball when you're behind in the count. And you got to keep hitters honest, and you got to keep them off your fastball. And so that's why his secondary pitches, the changeup and the knuckle curve, I think those are going to be, you know, big pitches for him.
And where do you think they are right now? Let's say it's 2-0 count. Can he break one off here? Or is he at that point yet that he has the confidence in it?
I don't think they would want him, you know, for an average pitcher like that. I think, you know, you want a guy to be able to do that. But I think his stuff is so explosive with his fastball. If he's throwing 2-0 knuckle curves, to me, that's just not an endorsement for his fastball. He's a little different like that, where he can just bring it and he could tell them, hey, a fastball's coming, and they still might not be able to hit it or square
sure.
it up, even major league hitters. But I think as he develops, you know, that he's going to be able to you know, manipulate that curveball a little bit, maybe make it sweep a little bit, and then he'll be able to throw that for, you know, when he's behind the count, 2-1, 3-1, 2-0. But right now, I would think that, you know, if he does fall down to 3-0 or 2-0, I think you're going to see that fastball.
Tom Candiotti with Brad Sismat for a couple of minutes. Sports 360 AZ, AZ Central Sports, Diamondbacks analyst, as last night talking about Archie Bradley and just pitching in general. So as you look at the rest of this staff, who has caught your eye so far that may not have had anything written about him, talked about him, blogged about him, tweeted about him so far in Diamondbacks camp from a rotation, could be bullpen, starting rotation, just from a pitching standpoint, who's caught your eye?
Well, there's two guys. I think all the starters have been excellent so far. You know, the one guy that has really stood out has been Brandon McCarthy. You know, he ended up throwing, five no-hit innings yesterday. To follow up a four-inning outing, his first one. So he has been, you know, excellent. You know, we didn't see a lot of that last year. He came over from Oakland with high accolades, just was not able to get it going really last year, had injury problems. But this spring, he's looked good. And the guy that impresses me, it goes under the radar, is that Wade Miley. I saw him, we did a game and saw him pitch against the Giants. Works very quick. He threw all four of his pitches for strikes. You know, he attacks hitters. And last year, you know, he had a 3.55 ERA. I mean, 3.55, and he had a 500 record. Usually, if you have a 3.55 ERA in this day and age,
yeah,
you know, you should be winning, you know, anywhere from 15 to, you know, 19 wins up there. So that's, you know, I think if he gets a little bit of run support and he keeps pitching the way he's been doing here in spring, I think you're going to see numbers from Wade almost, you know, like his rookie year.
Through the years, when we get into spring training, there hits that point where it's the dead arm period of spring training. I'm curious from your view, is that still exist in this year in, year out, day in, day out preparation, year round in spring training like it used to?
Well, you know, the arm fatigue is always something, but nowadays, you know,
it's so managed, you know, so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Heck, I remember even getting to spring training and having to run, you know, 2 miles in spikes. They wouldn't even let us put tennis shoes on, you know. So I think with the, you know, the advancement in science and in sports science, that you know, guys are able to take care of their arms so much better. They're not going to stand out there and shag after they throw bullpens and do PFPs. You know, there's they're treated so differently, and so I think you get rid of a lot of that that taxing that maybe we used to put on our arms, that they don't quite get to that point nowadays.
And I bring it up because with the Australia trip, when is that period of time in spring training for the Diamondbacks this year? Is it about now where, okay, they have a couple starts in, one or two starts in. The next week or so, are we going to see numbers that you really shouldn't make anything out of, in my view?
Well, I agree. You know, I know in spring training in the past, it used to be, okay, you get yourself in shape, in throwing shape, and then you start breaking your breaking balls off and you try to get ready for the season. Well, now it's, you know, this year you're on the accelerated, you know, steps right now where you want to go out there and be game ready. And I'm talking particularly Corbin and Cahill, the name, the first two starters,
mm-hmm.
you know, they got to get their stuff going and their breaking ball going for Corbin. And with, Cahill, he's really got to concentrate on that sinker and his changeup and that occasional curveball. So, I mean, you got to start getting your secondary pitches, you know, in better shape earlier in spring than you used to.
Yeah, and before I let you go, then, what is it you want to see? Maybe it's a concern, maybe it's not, but what is it you need to see here before this team breaks for Australia out of the pitchers? Is there a guy in particular you're looking at? Okay, let's see what he's got here.
Well, I think going into Australia, you know your first two starters. And so the guy that's going to get some innings, I think, is going to be Kolmener.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because you can't expect these guys to go, you know, seven innings plus right now off the bat, you know, halfway through spring. And so I think you're going to get to the bullpen probably a little bit quicker. And so a guy like Ziegler, who can, you know, who can throw every day, you probably see him in both games, I would imagine. And if there's a couple innings to fill, you know, you've got a whole multitude of guys down there that you can use.
Delgado.
Because you're not worried about, you know, the next series or anything. So you got two games to be able to use. I don't know how many pitchers they're going to take yet, but you might send 12 pitchers down there.
A guy like Delgado, if he's here, is somebody that you could look at too in that mix, right?
Exactly. You know, Delgado's one. You know, Kolmener's one. You know, for the long guys. And then, I mean, look at the bullpen. You can fill innings with every one of those guys down there because, you know, there's no consequence of the next series. You got another week off or so before the season starts.
Hey, I really enjoyed the visit. Hope to catch up with you down the road. Safe travels to Australia, Tom. Thanks.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks for having me.
Tom Candiotti with us for a couple of minutes. This segment brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Tom Candiotti is a Santan Ford guy. I know that. General Manager Tim Hovick and company, great group of people. Doesn't matter if it's Patrick Peterson or Larry Fitzgerald or if Tom Candiotti or even myself. It's the place that I feel comfortable telling you to go get that vehicle, that car, that truck. Santan Ford's been a big part of what we do here at Sports 360 AZ for the last couple of years. Next week, we'll be in Las Vegas covering the Pac-12 basketball tournament with ASU U of A, thanks to our good friends at Santan Ford. It is all about you, Santan Ford. I drive the 2014 Ford Fusion from Santan Ford. A lot of confidence. Other people can talk about it. They get the job done. Tim Hovick and company do it right. That's at Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Talk to the Lopes is next. It's Tuesday. GCU women's sand volleyball coach Chris Neighbor. Love doing the GCU and Talk to the Lopes, all the different coaches. Sand volleyball at the Division I level. They play U of A day after tomorrow. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center available 24/7, 365 at sports360az.com.
Sports 360 AZ and, of course, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter at Brad Sussmats. Time for Talk to the Lopes, GCU Athletics. Always good to talk GCU, gcu.edu, every Tuesday. And today in the spotlight, when I had heard that they had sand volleyball coming to Grand Canyon University, my daughter goes to GCU, said it's pretty cool. She went last week. There were food trucks that were out there, big festive deal. So the students
really get into. It's always good to you when you hear that from your own kid, right? So I wanted to dig a little bit deeper on this and find out, okay, how did sand volleyball get going at Grand Canyon? The longtime coach, Chris Neighbor, 20-plus years at GCU. You were a player at GCU, right, Chris?
I was. Thanks, Brett, for having me. Yeah, I played here in the late 80s, went away, taught high school for 4 years, and then was lucky enough to come back.
And so you've been seeing just regular volleyball for, and sand is something I grew up seeing over in Southern California. I grew up outside of Carlsbad. So sand right. volleyball, that's the deal. And when you're 6'8 like me, yeah, they want you to go out there. Problem is I can't jump to save my life, right? So, but you, so you build this program of playing indoor. When did sand volleyball come on your radar? Was this Keith Baker? Was this Brian Mueller? Was this you going to them? How did sand volleyball come about at GCU?
Well, you know, I think it was a collective interest from all of us. I think with the Olympics being last year, kind of started the spark. We had trained the previous year, so 2 years ago, we had trained our indoor girls for a large amount of our spring season in the sand and saw the benefits that training, not the game, not the strategy so much, but physical benefits that we got indoor. And we thought, well, you know what, it's kind of an emerging sport, and let's see if we can be the first Division II school in the nation to sponsor it. And so we wrote up a proposal, took it to Keith. He took it to Stan and Brian, and, you know, it happened last August, two Augusts ago, and we were fortunate enough for them to say, hey, let's see what we can do with this thing.
You didn't have to work them over?
Yeah, no, well, a little.
A little, yeah, like
a
really?
A little, but, you know, I think... They support, the administration supports athletics so much here, but they wanted to make sure that this was something that NCAA was serious about, that we were serious about, that we felt like we could be competitive in. And last year, we, you know, all of our girls, all of our indoor girls played and did a great job, but we're learning the game. This year, we had a year to do recruiting. We brought sand-only players in. Our indoor girls that are playing sand have a little more experience, and so this year, you're going to see a more competitive group. But you know, with and obviously more experience.
You open the season this weekend at U of A, right? Saturday?
Yes. Yeah. Saturday.
So, and I heard from my daughter about the scrimmage you had this last week, the purple and black sand deal. So, and there are food trucks out there and all that. There's right. a lot of questions I have off the top here. How do you go about recruiting a sand player versus an indoor player? And how do you make indoor players sand players like you've had to do? Is there a big difference?
You know, I think right now they're similar. You're going to find a lot of athletes that are playing both and want to have that ability to, or the opportunity to compete both seasons, so year round.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the next 3 to 4 years, once sand volleyball becomes an NCAA sport and it's just full blown, you're going to find more athletes choosing. Either wanting to choose or having to choose because you're recruiting or you're training year round. And the you know, Whitney Estes has done, she's one of our main recruiters. She's done a great job going over to Southern California, going to Florida, and finding those athletes that just want to play beach.
And so I'm just going through, and this is fun in a good sort of way. What do you, I'm sitting next to her on a plane. What do you do? Why, I'm going to look for sand volleyball players to go to college. What do you do? Well, you're doing what?
Yeah.
That's not a bad gig. How can I sign up for that?
You know, it's not. She flew out last Sunday morning, went to the beach for 5 hours, and then hopped back on a plane and came back home. So it definitely has its advantages if you like being outside by the water in the sand. But, you know, our challenge is to find the best players, and
sure.
we're competing, recruiting-wise, we're competing against Pepperdine and USC and UCLA and Stanford and U of A. So it's, you know, it's got its pluses, definitely, but it's also got its challenges that we're ready to face. So
Chris Neighbor is the women's head volleyball coach and sand volleyball coach for Grand Canyon University. Talk to the Lopes every week here on Sports 360 AZ. Appreciate the coach coming on with us for a couple of minutes. When you're recruiting against Pepperdine, hey,
yeah.
you don't want to go to Pepperdine. You need to come to Phoenix, even though the beach doesn't quite break here. How do you go about recruiting a kid for beach volleyball in Arizona?
Well, and I, you know, that's something that we've sat down and had talked about. But you get them on campus here, and they see the growth. They see the support. They see the buildings. They see you know, last week we did the purple black scrimmage and we had a great turnout as far as support goes. We had the food trucks out there. You know, you obviously for a player that wants to be in Malibu, you're
in Malibu.
What's that?
You're in Malibu. You're not going to beat that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We get it.
It's a little different than Central Phoenix. But I really think once they see the campus, they see what we have to offer, we're going to get the good players in here. We really are.
When you are building this program, then it sounds like you're on the front end of this. Do you anticipate this sport, sand volleyball, becoming mainstream across the NCAAs? Because there's just a handful of schools right now, right?
Right. There's just under 40 that have a full schedule. And yes, I do. That's one thing that when I talked to Keith originally about it, and I said, this thing is going to blow up. It really is. And for us to be one of the first 25 schools to sponsor it and then, you know, keep going from there, we're going to have 3 years under our belt, 4 years under our belt before it even becomes an NCAA sport. But I do. I see it exploding. It's going to be in 5 to 10 years, Brad, I think it'll be as big as it's the indoor game.
Really? That's a strong statement. So I'm
it
wondering.
It is, but I do see it that way.
I'm a club volleyball dad, at least I was. She's moved on to other things and into college. She's actually there on your campus now. But I'm wondering the club volleyball scene in Arizona. Are you able to, whether it's indoor or outdoor, are you able to pick off some in Arizona now? Has the club scene gotten to that point, or is it still emerging and needs some work?
No, because I think some of the clubs in Arizona are starting to focus on the outdoor program also. There's a couple girls, well, I shouldn't say a couple, there's 4 or 5 girls in Arizona that we have contact right now that we brought on campus that are interested in doing both and great, great players in both games. And I think you're going to find in the next few years, the trend is for schools that have sponsored both indoor and outdoor sand or indoor and outdoor volleyball that they're going to have separate teams. You will have those 2, 3, maybe 4 players that go back and forth. And those are the players that we're talking to in Arizona right now. But definitely, I think, you know, Arizona's done a great job as far as promoting both and training both the indoor and getting really started heavily in the outdoor game.
How do you see yourself matching up with U of A, Coach?
Well, yeah, I win 3 out of 5. I say we win 3 out of 5. Let's start there.
And my point is it's your first year. Should there be a low, not low, but should there be there, they've been at it, they're much more talented, or do you think your roster is even with theirs?
You know, I think our roster is even. In the outdoor game, it's so, gosh, there's so many elements that go into it. We played U of A last year in the Arizona College event and up at Victory Lane. And the Arizona region sponsors that. And we had 2 of our teams were competing against those 2 in the semifinal. And so I really think, you know, with our experience, with the players that we brought in, we feel like we have the right pairs together. I think we're going to be pretty competitive. I'm excited.
You sound it. I appreciate your visit. Good luck to you. Thanks for the time.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
It's Chris Naber, the women's sand volleyball and women's volleyball coach, GCU alum. That is Talk to the Lopes. Talk to the Lopes every week. GCU.edu at Grand Canyon University. E, you have to go do a story on the women's sand volleyball team over GCU.
Oh, do I have to?
I know.
Really?
It's rough stuff. Here's the thing. Okay, so, yeah, I mean, the perception for guys is it's just a bunch of good-looking girls in 2-pieces that are playing. And that's true. I went over there 2 weeks ago and found myself walking by the court and just watching them. And it's like, these girls would kill me. They would implant the ball right across my forehead.
They're phenomenal athletes.
Oh, my gosh. And they're, you know, they are out there diving around in the sand and just laying out. And there's not a beach in sight that I've seen for a few hundred miles.
Yeah, go play 5 minutes of sand volleyball on a beach and let me know how your ankles and your legs and your knees feel.
But no, that's such a cool story. I'm very happy that that's going on here in our own backyard. U of A opened their football practice, their spring football practice. So we're going to get into that here in the next few days. Devontae Neal, Connor Brewer, all these in-state players, life after Kadeem Carey. I want to get into that. ASU plays tonight at Oregon.
And for ASU, they're in the tournament, I think. This is on the college basketball, and ASU at Oregon's tonight. And we have the Coyotes in the NHL trade deadline by tomorrow. I got to believe something's happening there. They've got to move somebody. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat.